Book 4. Beamtenherrschaft.
Well, Hoover performed. He would have fought. That was the point. He would have defied a few people. He would have scared them to death. He has a file on everybody. Richard Milhouse Nixon.
The eighth trip, or Hod. Telemachus sneezed.
There came unto the high chaparral one who had studied in the schools of the Purple Sage, and of the Hung Mung Tong, and of the Illuminati, and of the many other schools. And this one had found no peace yet. Yea, of the Discordians, and the teachers of Mumu, and of the Nazarene, and of the Buddha he had studied. And he had found no peace yet. And he spake to the high chaparral and said, Give me a sign that I may believe. And the high chaparral said unto him, Leave my presence, and seek ye the horizon, and the sign shall come unto you, and ye shall seek no more. And the man turned and sought of the horizon, but the high chaparral crept up behind him, and raised his foot, and did deliver a most poignant kick in the man's arse, which smarted much, and humiliated the seeker grievously. He who has eyes, let him read and understand. The Book of Grandmotherly Kindness, The Dishonest Book of Lies, by Mordecai Malignatus, K.N.S.
The Starry Wisdom Church was not 0005's idea of a proper ecclesiastical shop by any means. The architecture was a shade too gothic, the designs on the stained glass windows a bit unpleasantly suggestive for a holy atmosphere.
My God, they must be bloody wogs,
he thought. And when he opened the door, the altar was lacking a proper crucifix. In fact, where the crucifix should have been, he found instead a design that was more than suggestive. It was, in his opinion, downright tasteless.
Not high church at all,
Chips decided. He advanced cautiously, although the building appeared deserted.
The pews seem designed for bloody reptiles,
he observed. A church, of course, should be uncomfortable. That was good for the soul. But this was, well, gross.
They probably advertise in the kink newspapers,
he reflected with distaste. The first stained glass window was worse from inside than outside. He didn't know who St. Toad was, but if that mosaic with his name on it gave any idea of St. Toad's appearance and predilections, then, by God, no self-respecting Christian congregation would ever think of sanctifying him. The next feller, a Shoggoth, was even less appetizing. At least they had the common decency not to canonize him. A rat scurried out from between two pews and ran across the center aisle, right before Chips's feet.
Fair got on one's nerves, this place did.
Chips approached the pulpit and glanced up at the Bible. That was, at least, one civilized touch. Curious as to what text might have been preached last in this den of wogs, he scrambled up to the pulpit and scanned the open pages. To his consternation, it wasn't the Bible at all. A lot of bragging and bombast about some Yog-Sothoth,
probably a wog god,
who was both the gate and the guardian of the gate.
Absolute rubbish.
Chips hefted the enormous volume and turned it so he could read the spine.
Necronomicon, eh?
If his university Latin could be trusted, that was something like the Book of the Names of the Dead. Morbid, like the whole building. He approached the altar, refusing to look at the abominable design above it. Rust. Now what could one say of brutes who let their altar get rusty? He scraped with his thumbnail. The altar was marble, and marble doesn't rust. A decidedly unpleasant suspicion crossed his mind, and he tasted what his nail had lifted.
Blood. Fairly fresh blood. Not high church at all.
Chips approached the vestry and walked into a web.
Damn,
he muttered, hacking at it with his flashlight, and something fell on his shoulder. He brushed it off quickly and turned the light to the floor. It started to run up his trouser leg, and he brushed it off again, beginning to breathe heavily, and stepped on it hard. There was a satisfactory snapping sound, and he stomped again to be sure. When he removed his shoe and turned the light down again, it was dead.
A damned huge ugly brute of a spider. black gods, saint toads, rats, mysterious and heathenish capitalized gates, that nasty-looking Shoggoth character, and now spiders. A buggering tarantula, it looked like, in fact. Next, Count Dracula,
he thought grimly, testing the vestry door. It slid open smoothly, and he stepped back out of visible range, waiting a moment. They were either not at home or cool enough to allow him the next move. He stepped through the door and flashed his light around.
Oh, God, no,
he said.
No, God, no!
Goodbye, Mr. Chips,
said St. Toad.
Did you ever take the underground from Charing Cross to one of the suburbs? You know, that long ride without stops when you're totally in the dark and everything seems to be rushing by outside in the opposite direction. Relativity, the laboratory smock people called it. In fact, it was even more like going up a chimney than going forward in a tunnel, but it was like both at the same time, if you follow me. Relativity. A bitter-looking old man went by, dressed in turn-of-the-century Yankee clothing, muttering something about Carcosa. An antique Pontiac car followed him with four Italians in it, looking confused. It was slow enough for me to spot the year, definitely 1936, and even to read the license plates, Rhode Island AW 1472. Then a black man, not a negro or a wog, but a really truly black man without a face, and I'd hate to tell you what he had where the face should have been. All the while, there was this bleating or squealing that seemed to say, Tequila Lee, Tequila Lee. Another man, English-looking but in early 19th-century clothing, he looked my way, surprised, and said, I only walked around the horses. I could sympathize. I only opened a bleeding door. A giant beetle, who looked at me more intelligently than any bug I ever saw before. He seemed to be going in a different direction, if there was direction in this place. A white-haired old man with startling blue eyes who shouted, Roderick Usher! As he flew by. Then a whole parade of pentagons and other mathematical shapes that seemed to be talking to each other in some language of the past or the future or wherever they called home. And by now, it wasn't so much like a tunnel or even a chimney, but a kind of roller coaster with dips and loops, but not the sort you find in a place like Brighton. I think I saw this kind of curve once on a blackboard, when a class in non-Euclidean geometry had used the room before my own class in Inglet, Pope to Swinburne, and Neo-Raff. Then I passed a Shoggoth, or it passed me, and let me say that their pictures simply do not do them justice. I am ready to go anywhere and confront any peril on HM service. But I pray to the Lord Harry I never have to get that close to one of those chaps again. Next came a jerk, or cusp is probably the word. I recognized something. Ingolstadt. The middle of the university. Then we were off again. But not for long. Another cusp. Stonehenge. A bunch of hooded people right out of a Yank movie about the KKK were busy with some gruesome mummery right in the centre of the stones, yelling ferociously about some ruddy goat with a thousand young, and the stars were all wrong overhead. Well, you pick up your education where you can. Now I know, even if I can't tell any bloody academic how I know, that Stonehenge is much older than we think. Whiz, bang, we're off again. And now ships are floating by. Everything from old Yankee clippers to modern luxury liners, all of them, signalling the old SOS semaphore desperately, and a bunch of airplanes following in their wake. I realised that part must be the Bermuda Triangle. And then it dawned on me that the turn-of-the-century Yank with the bitter face might be Ambrose Bierce. I still hadn't the foggiest who all those other chaps were. Then along came a girl, a dog, a lion, a tin man, and a scarecrow. A real puzzler, that. Was I visiting real places, or just places in people's minds, or was there a difference? When the mock turtle, the walrus, the carpenter, and another little girl came along, my faith in the difference began to crumble. Or did some of those writer blokes know how to tap into this alternate world, or fifth dimension, or whatever it was? The Shoggoth came by again, or was it his twin brother, and shouted, or should I say gibbered, "Yog, Sothoth, Neblod, Zin," and I could tell that was something perfectly filthy by the tone of his voice. I mean, after all, I can take a queer proposition without biffing the offender on the nose. One must be cosmopolitan, you know. But I would vastly prefer to have such offers coming out of human mouths, or at the very least out of mouths rather than orifices that shouldn't properly be talking at all. But you would have to see a Shoggoth yourself, God forbid, to appreciate what I mean. The next stop was quite a refrigerator. Miles and miles of it. And that's where the creature who kept up that howling of "Tequili-dee, tequili-dee," hung his hat, or its hat. I shan't attempt to do him or its justice. That Necronomicon said about Yog-Sothoth that "Kadath in the cold waste hath known him." And now I realised that "known" was used in the biblical sense. I just hope he or it stays in the cold waste. You wouldn't want to meet him or it on the strand at midday, believe me. His habits were even worse than his ancestry, and why he couldn't scrape off some of the seaweed and barnacles is beyond me. He was rather like Saint Toad in his notions of sartorial splendour and table etiquette, if you take my meaning. But I was off again. The curvature was getting sharper and the cusps more frequent. There was no mistaking the heads where I arrived next. Easter Island. I had a moment to reflect on how those heads resembled Tlaloc and the Loaigor of Fernando Poo, and then this Kinks version of a cook's tour moved on, and there I was, at the last stop. "Damn, blast, and thunder," I said, looking at Manolete, turning his Veronica, and Concepcion lying there with her poor throat cut. Now that absolutely does tear it. I decided not to toddle over to the Starry Wisdom Church this time around. There is a limit, after all. Instead, I went out into Tequila Imota Street and approached the church, but kept my distance, trying to figure where bugger kept the time machine. While I was reflecting on that, I heard the first pistol shot. Then a volley. The next thing I knew, the whole population of Fernando Poo, Cubans descended from the prisoners shipped there when it was a penal colony in the 19th century, Spaniards from colonial days, blacks, wogs, and whatnot, were on Tequila Imota Street, using up all the munitions they owned. It was the counter-coup, of course. The Captain Puta crowd, who unseated Tequila Imota and prevented the nuclear war.
But I didn't know that at the time, so I dashed into the nearest doorway and tried to duck the flying bullets, which were coming, mind you, as thick as the darling buds in May. It was hairy. And one Spanish bloke, gay as a tree full of parrots from his trot and his carriage, goes by, waving an old cutlass out of a book and shouting, "Better to die on our feet than to live on our knees," headed straightway into a group of regular army who had finally turned out to try to stop this business. He waded right into them, cutting heads like a pirate, until they shot him as full of holes as auntie's drawers. That's your Spaniards. Even the queers have balls. Well, this wasn't my show, so I backed up, opened the door, and stepped into the building. I just had a moment to recognize which building I had picked when Saint Toad gave me his bilious eye and said,
"You again?"
The trip was less interesting this time. I'd seen it before, after all. And I had time to think a bit and realize that old Frogface wasn't using a time machine or any mechanical device at all. Then I was in front of a pyramid. They missed that stop last time. And I waited to arrive back in the Hotel Durruti. To my surprise, when there was a final jerk in the dimensions, or whatever they were, I found myself someplace else.